Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
At 73 years of age, I calculate the sum value of my life, not by the state of my health, which is dubious at best, or how much money I've accumulated, or even the success of the books I have written, but instead upon the relationships I have with my kids and the number of regrets I harbor. I have a complete realization of my shortcomings, but I'm a decent person and spend my days building my nest egg of personal, meaningful worth before it's time to check into the retirement center in the sky. This is G.P. Gottlieb, host of New Books in Literature, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. And today I'm talking to Dan Burns, author of Grace. In the compilation of five stories and a novella, Burns explores memory and identity in a variety of settings. His characters grapple with family members, loneliness, marriage, alcohol, and death. His stories are peppered with illustrations, 26 illustrations by Chicago artist Kelly Mariansky, and poems that Burns has written and collected over the years. Hi, Dan. Thanks for joining me today.
Hi, Galit. Thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So I know you've done a lot of these kind of interviews, and you're a seasoned author with a book or two under your belt. So let's just jump in and talk about what I thought, you can correct me, were the major themes, memory and identity. Why do these themes resonate for you?
Well, it's identity, I think, is something we all kind of migrate towards, gravitate towards, think about. And memory is kind of, it's who we are. We tend to dwell and look back, and those things are very much a part of our existence. And I wanted to write about those things, as well as many other themes in these stories in the new book. And it was great fun exploring all of them.
How did you decide to put these particular stories together?
Well, the whole project was built around the novella, which is called Grace. And I spent more than 2 years working on that particular project. It started based upon an experience on my way to the office one day. And to kind of flush it out, I wrote a poem that day. And that poem stuck with me and wouldn't leave me alone. And I developed it further into a short story and then a play for the theater. And even at that point, it still wouldn't leave me alone. So I developed it further into a novella. And I thought about, you know, publishing it by itself. But I searched back through my files, and I had these other stories that all kind of carried along this same theme of grace. And more specifically, reacting with grace under pressure. And I was able to pick out these stories, which really all fit very nicely to that thematic scenario. And in each of the stories, the novella included, the people in the story are confronted with a particular situation that is outside the norm, and the characters need to go within themselves and dig deep for whatever it is, strength, the wherewithal, the perseverance to overcome that particular situation with a certain amount of grace. And it really came together beautifully. And I think all of the stories in this collection are tightly woven with that overall thematic arch.
Other themes, family, marriage, alcohol, death. We could take them apart one by one, or you can address them as a whole.
Well, boy, yeah. I mean, you talk about it that way. That's an awful lot. But you're right. And many of those themes are in a single story, and there's some overlap in others. It's again, I think the idea was, well, certainly as I was writing each story, I didn't have that grand scope of all of those themes. And you know, each story has a theme that it's focusing on. And I don't know, in retrospect, after pulling it together, it was apparent that, you know, the stories were similar. And all I can say is that, you know, wherever those ideas came from, based upon my life, my experience, what I've read, what I know, people I've talked to, those were the themes that just kind of rose to the top, and I really felt that I needed to focus on and address. And the other thing I don't know that I realized it as I was writing each individual story, but after pulling the collection together, it was apparent to me that these are themes that everyone can relate to. And it's probably, you know, the book's been out for, I don't know, about a month now. And it's probably the number one comment I get back from readers, in that they can relate to the stories, that these situations, these thematic scenarios are very, I mean, they were personal for me when I was writing them, but they're very personal for people as they're reading them. They can relate to these characters. They're real people. They can relate to the situations that they're in, because maybe that person has been in that situation, or they know of a friend or family member that's been in that situation. So it's kind of a beautiful thing about pulling a story collection together. You want it to be cohesive, but in this particular scenario, I think it connected it on a variety of different levels, not only thematically, but realistically and practically. And readers are mentioning those things in their feedback to me.
I especially liked reading the story notes that you added at the end of the whole collection. To the adage of write what you know, you've added write what you want to learn about. Can you talk about that?
You know, as a person, I'm always searching for more, whether it's what else is out there? What am I missing? What else do I need to learn? And, you know, so when I'm writing it, I'm writing based upon whatever's in my head at that particular point in time. And as I mentioned before, that's based upon my life of experiences and knowledge and whatever. But there's all these things that I realize that I don't know. And if I can, through a story, explore a topic, a scenario, a person and their personality, and learn something more, I think that's a really cool thing. And I included that note specifically, I think it was in relation to the first story, the opening story, Redemption. And it, on one hand, I was writing about what I know, because the story is set in Montana, and I've spent a good portion of my adult life venturing around the state. But the protagonist is a 73-year-old widowed writer who is kind of alone and on his own. And that is not me. And I kind of wondered what it would be like to be in that person's head, in his shoes, experiencing life from that perspective. Mm-hmm. And so it was a great learning experience to, based upon people I know and people I've read about and everything I could gather, to put myself into that character's head from that perspective and experience what he was experiencing given that predicament he was put in. It was really very, very cool and a lot of fun. Mm-hmm.
And not only was Montana important, but the Boulder River Valley in that story was like another character. It was a very important character, right?
I think so. And, you know, I've traveled through there a couple of times. It's, for me, likely one of the most beautiful parts of not only the state, but, and I'll say the country. And I've only been there a couple of times. I'd like to spend more time there, which is probably why I set the story particularly in that area, because I wanted to experience more without actually flying there and being there in person. But it's very much a character, because it's Anson Miller, who is the protagonist. It's where he lives, and you know, he's a solitary figure at the onset, and it's his environment that he has the relationship until that changes and a new person steps into the.
And you dedicate that story to the memory of somebody you respect quite a lot.
Very much so. The author Jim Harrison, just a fabulous writer, poet, novelist, screenwriter, and I think one of the masters of the novella form. And I wrote that the story Redemption back in 2016 after Jim Harrison's passing. And I read of all his books, and you know, was a big fan. And you know, I think not only for me, but everyone who has read him was probably a little bit taken aback in that, you know, he was albeit, you know, somewhat on the unknown side, but he was a force of nature, you know, in the writing field and in his life. And I think, you know, he'll be sorely missed. And so, you know, Anson Miller, who's the protagonist, is kind of, you know, in that same age and situation as, you know, Jim Harrison was at the time of his death. And I don't know, I think it was a way for me to explore what it was like for Harrison and then this character Anson to be at that age and be by yourself and be stuck in the most beautiful part of the country, arguably, and in this beautiful part in the state of Montana, and you know, see what happens. And again, it was a great experience, I think, in writing that story. And it kicks off the collection, because I think it's likely, well, this is my own opinion, I think it's one of my strongest stories that I've ever written, one of my most personal. And it covered a lot of territory. And I think it was the first time you may have noticed, and I included in the notes as well. It was the first time I incorporated poetry into any of my stories, and it wasn't intentional. It just fit. And just very quickly, I'll say, you know, Anson in the story, he's trying to write, and he looks out through the window at a fence post, and there's a black crow there. And I'm not sure why, but that's what came up as I was writing the story. And I thought, you know, years back, I wrote a poem called Black Crow. And I went back through my files and pulled it out and read it. And I thought that it really fit the current scenario of the story. And maybe that's why, you know, subconsciously it was stuck there, and that's why Black Crow popped out as I was writing the story. But I thought it was interesting, and so I included the poem that I wrote, but in the story Anson Miller wrote. And
in addition to the poems that you included, I thought this was really interesting that you include sketches.
Yeah, it's, you know, I've been a big fan of, if you go back to the way they used to produce books, you know, 100 years ago, it was a craft, it was an art of publishing. And illustrations were very much a part of many books. And so this is the second book of stories that I included illustrations on. And you know, I met this woman, Kelly Mariansky. It was over 5 years ago. She's a local artist and actress and performer here in Chicago. And, you know, I met her, I got to know her work, and I decided to try her on the first story collection. It turned out fabulously. And it's just, this is how it works. You know, I send her the stories, she sends me the illustrations. I've never once said, change that, or I don't get it, or that doesn't make sense. I think she gets me. She understands what I'm trying to get across in the stories. And I think her illustrations are wonderful. It's a great addition. It adds a different kind of layer to an approach to the storytelling. And I think some of those illustrations are right on the mark. And
did she send you exactly the amount that you have here? Or so you accept everything she sends, or she sends more than you need?
Everything that she sent me is in the book.
Wow. Okay. We have more to talk about. Let's get to the second story, The Plight of Maximus Octavius Reinhold. It's about a guy whose wife threatens to claim abuse if he leaves her. So here's what's in, we don't want to give away anything, but it's interesting that one of the characters who's a witness to the action is someone who appears in other stories of yours.
Right.
So what's going on there?
So the character in question is Sebastian Drake, and he appeared first in a story in my first story collection, which is called No Turning Back. And then he appeared 2 years ago in a novel called A Fine Line. And he is just a wonderful, interesting character that very simply will not leave me alone. He's
maybe he'll get his own book one day.
You know, the last novel, it was his, and the next novel that's coming is the second in his story. So,
okay.
Yeah, he's been around a few times. He'll be back again. And he's just an interesting character. He's, your reader fans out there who like Jack Reacher. He's not Jack Reacher, but he's kind of a combination of Jack Reacher and for your TV fans, if anyone has watched the series Justified, Raylan Givens. So it was all
okay.
These
neither of those make any say anything to me. So, but I'm sure there are people who.
It was all these characters from movies and television and books that I've read that, you know, kind of morphed into my head to create this character.
Okay.
He is a, ex-government, Secret Service, CIA, highly trained, skillful person.
Oh, I don't think we find that out about him in this story, do we?
We don't. He's just,
so that's the backstory.
He's just on his way to investigate, or to find out about a private investigation job, and he gets stopped and encounters this situation.
Okay, so I'll have to read more about him because he is kind of intriguing. But the one story that I read this last week and I'm still thinking about, Hardwired, brilliant story about a dying man who's had a full life, And I, of course, we don't want to talk more too much about it, but I wondered why you chose Ireland as the place where advanced technology is applied. I read that you, in your notes, that you had just taken your family for a vacation to Ireland, but the way this all is set up is really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, certainly the fact that we had just returned from a trip there had an influence. Have you ever been to Ireland?
Nope.
What a beautiful country. And, you know, it certainly left its impression on me, and I'll say my family as well. So it was fresh in my mind, and the images of the places we visited were still vivid in my memory. And it just, you know, it seemed natural. It had to be someplace far away that where it had happened. And it just seemed to make an awful lot of sense. Plus, because it was so fresh, I could write about it so that it was believable. You know, it's hard to write about places that you haven't been to. Conversely, it's much easier when it's coming back off a fresh visit. And I think it's, you know, readers may not feel that that's necessarily where one might go for that technological innovation. But I think the more interesting point was, you know, how it happened and why he was there in the first place, and why he felt it necessary to go back there towards, you know, the...
Of course, that is, but we don't want to give away anything. Let's go on to the next story, Adrift at Sea. How much was this story about a man running away from something as opposed to running towards something?
Hey, that's a, you know, that's a great question and a great insight. It's both. You know, I mean, ultimately, he is out in search of her, as I refer to her in the story, his muse, which is, you know, the sea is the metaphor for what he is searching for, because it's only when he is off land at sea that, you know, he's really able to find out about himself and explore himself and explore his writing. And when he's on land, he feels stuck. So, you know, the story opens where he's on land ready to embark on, you know, his first journey. And I had, you know, it was a very different storytelling approach. I don't know if you felt that as you were reading it. It started as a prose poem, and I think it's really still that. And the approach is a bit different than that. It incorporates a lot more symbolism and the unique selection of words to convey, you know, what this individual is going through. And it started off as a, you know, a short, you know, one section piece. And it ended up being, you know, I would go into my office, you know, day after day, and it was like he was sharing with me his journal entry for, you know, the last day.
It was like an Odysseus story without the concept of going home. Right? He was on this. So that was what made it different. Wasn't what one would expect from somebody going on a journey of that sort. None of your stories end the way anybody thinks they're going to end. Let's just say that. Would you agree?
I like that.
Okay.
And I'm glad you said that. Maybe that will come across to certain readers that they weren't able to figure it out or know exactly how it was going to end. But I think that's okay. You know, very often when I'm writing a story, I try and know how the story starts and how it ends. But, you know, after journeying myself through that story, the goalposts move sometimes, and the end changes, and, you know, oftentimes I'm surprised with how how the story ends. We'll probably talk about the novella Grace, but that was certainly the case with that story. I got to the end, this character walked in. Oh my goodness. You know, I'm not sure what transpired after I was done writing, but I was surprised and exhilarated. And so sometimes I'm not sure it ends the way it was intended for me. But if anything, if I can leave the reader with a sense of resolution, but then also thinking, what's next? I think that's a good thing.
So about Grace, it really is written as if I could see it being performed on a stage. It takes place in two specific locations, and there's specific characters. Other stories, you have the Great West, different parts of the world, but this takes place indoors. I see it as a play. What's happening?
I see it as a play too, and I'm hoping that I'll be able to talk to you again at some point in the near future to tell you about it being staged at a Chicago theater.
Ooh. Oh, you know what? I realized we forgot to mention The Final Countdown, which is a futuristic dystopian community that I totally didn't see how that was going to be. It was very disturbing, but also there were sweet moments.
Yeah, it's I think it's a tender and genuine, love story between a young boy and his grandfather. Mm-hmm. And, we don't want to give anything away, but that's really what that story is about. And, even at the end of the story, I think the young boy is envisioning, how he will interact with his grandfather in the future.
And in several of the stories, someone gets punched in the nose or there's some kind of physical violence, which isn't something that many of us are used to. But I'm wondering, did that happen to you, or is it something that interests you in some way?
Getting punched in the nose?
Yeah, physical violence. Were you a boxer? Are you a kickboxer? Do you practice some kind of martial art? Is punching in the nose in your life?
It is not.
Okay.
I do not punch. Fortunately, I've not been involved in any violence. However, we are all bombarded with it every day, in the news and the media. It's happening all around us, so that, it happening in a story is, I don't feel it's unusual. But I guess you're right there. A few of the stories have some type of, those shenanigans going on, and certainly in the novella, it's kind of an issue, but I don't know. That's a great question. It wasn't intentional, and it's not because I think about it a lot or it's part of my life, but it just seemed to fit the story.
It's very jarring to read about a character being pummeled or hurting another human being in that very immediate way, especially with a punch in the nose. There's something being said there. It's very personal. It's not an impersonal kick in the pants.
Well, the punch in the nose, I think you're referring to the plight of Maximus Octavius Reinhold, that story?
A punching in the face. There's a lot also in Grace. There's physical faces are involved.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
But you mentioned the punch in the nose, and it is very personal. And in the plight of Maximus Octavius Reinhold, the person who does the punching, I think readers will find it's very surprising.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It was a personal. The punch could have been to the to the gut or anywhere else, but no, it had to be the nose because that's what that character felt the need for, and Plus, you know, I mean, the person received it. I mean, that's the last thing you wanted to have happen is for that person to get punched in the nose. But maybe she, oops, maybe the character deserved it, or I don't know.
So Dan, what's next for you? What are you working on these days?
Boy, there's so much. Which one of the exciting things about, you know, being a writer, you're trying to market and sell and push the last one, and you're thinking about the next one and the one after that. I've been taking to poetry over the last 5 years. I've been reading a lot of poetry and writing a lot of poetry, and I've put a sizable collection together that I'm still working on. But I hope to publish a collection of poetry in the near future. The one story that we talked about already, which was The Final Countdown. You know, normally I get an idea, which is just a kind of a nugget, and I build upon it over time. And, you know, that in one respect, that story is that. But, you know, I thought about that predicament for that story in a much grander scheme. And anyway, that story is really kind of the start of a much broader, bigger novel that's going to be called Elder World. And that will be coming out in 2021.
Oh, good, because one can't help wonder what happens to all the elderly people.
All the elderly people and Douglas, you know, the young boy. We need to see how his life evolves over time and if it all turns out, or if it goes horribly wrong, which is kind of the direction we're left at the end of the story. And then, as I mentioned, the second installment of the Sebastian Drake mystery series I'm working on as well. So it's called A Perfect Circle, and I think readers are going to see it as a fantastic follow-up to his last adventure in the book titled A Fine Line.
Wow, you've got a lot on your plate, and I will look forward to reading the next thing that comes out from you. You're also involved in the Chicago writing scene?
I am. It's a huge scene. You know, writers think, you know, they have to be in New York or elsewhere to get noticed or get involved in the writing scene, and I think what's going on in Chicago is exciting and huge. And I'm on the board of the Chicago Writers Association, which is a fantastic organization, 1,000 members strong and growing. And our goal is to support the writer and in whatever phase of that writing process they're in, and share experiences and provide education and events to allow the writer to get out of the office, out of that solitary environment, and engage with other like-minded writers to share experiences and create a better social environment.
And in case people around the country and world are listening to this, is this only for people who live in the city of Chicago?
It's not. We have members worldwide. And okay. So it's a majority of our member benefits and offerings are available virtually and through our website and through other social mediums platforms. So check it out. The website is chicagowrites.org.
Thank you so much for joining me today, Dan.
Ellie,
happy writing.
Thank you so much for having me. I look forward to talking to you again soon.